The story is told of a minister who went to a new church to become its pastor. And on the first Sunday, a very expectant congregation came to listen to this new pastor, who obviously, as all new ministers and pastors in any appointment are, was obviously going to be their saviour. And he preached a sermon which just for the congregation just was spot on. And afterwards, they could be heard congratulating each other on the fact that they'd got this wonderful new minister who preached such wonderful sermons. So they came back the second week, expecting more of the same. And that's what they got, exactly the same. The same sermon, the same words. And they said to each other afterwards, they said, well, it's really good. Its sermon was so good the first time. It's really good to hear it the second time so we can get an even deeper understanding of it and hear, because we know we always miss something in a sermon. The third Sunday, he came and he preached again the same sermon. At this, they were beginning to get a little bit kind of concerned. And one or two were muttering and whispering and said, well, does he not know he's preached that to us before? And when after the fourth Sunday, and he'd preached the same sermon again, one or two went to the leaders, and the leaders eventually went to the minister, basically saying, have you not got another sermon? And they couched it in the way of, your first sermon is so, so, so good. He said, but have you not got something else to say to us? And the minister said, well, I have lots more. I'm just waiting for you to act on the first one. Just waiting for you to act on the first one. Although he could see it as a comment on what do we take away, each of us, when we hear sermons? Do we act on what the preacher is saying? Do we take note and let it transform our lives? There is that real sense that sometimes we don't. We like to hear the words, but we're not always very good acting on them. I think the prophets were very much like that new minister. When you read the prophets, you find time and time again them saying the same words, essentially, giving that same message. In this passage from Isaiah, and that's not even taken into account, there are three different people who put together, probably, the book of Isaiah. There is this message that runs through them, that message of the people turning away from God's ways and then going to God and moaning about why things are so bad. And the prophet reminding them of, are you living by God's ways? In this passage, which is part of a slightly longer passage entitled True and False Worship by some people, in it, the prophet, speaking on behalf of God, analyzes why Israel feel that things are not going well and says in his words, supposedly in that sense from God, that look at the way you're living, especially those of you who are rich, those of you who are wealthy, those of you who are powerful, look at the way you're living and look at the hypocrisy within that, but look also at what you're not doing. So he pointed especially to the rich and wealthy, how they would fast when it came to the proper time. But they would oppress their workers, meaning that these workers had to work despite the sense that they should be fasting too. Would speak of how, in general, there was that oppression of those who were being who were serving, if you like, their masters. So for him, for this prophet especially, but for others too, there is that sense of you might be keeping religious rituals, but you're ignoring what that really means and the ways that you need to be treating others. You are doing it for yourself, for your own interest, for putting on that show that says, what a wonderful person I am, without actually the substance of life being lived in a ways that might say something more positive. So what does God require? Well, 2 weeks ago we talked about it from Micah. But here in this passage too, we see what God requires is for us to loose the cords of injustice, to break the yokes that bind people, to feed the hungry, to house the homeless, to cover the naked. Hold on, doesn't Matthew say something similar in his gospel when he talks about sheep and goats? This is a message repeated time and time again. And it's a cry to us all and to all people about the way we should live. And in the passage that we heard, there is that repetition of the first part of chapter 58 of Isaiah in this final passage from it. How Israel should be living all the time, that they're not also to pursue their own interest, especially on the Sabbath. And so here then we have Jesus on a Sabbath, being accused by the leader of the synagogue of working or of work being done. In a similar passage a few chapters earlier, Jesus heals a man with a withered hand with just a word. His disciples have also been accused of breaking the Sabbath because they pluck grains of corn as they're walking through the fields where the Pharisees are oddly present to observe and point out fault. In this one, Jesus also lays hands on the woman. There is a question of whether is the laying of hands on this person, therefore, the work? Whereas before, with the man with the withered hand, and yes, he was complained about that, wasn't work because he didn't use his hands, he didn't lay hands on, he just spoke words. What constitutes work? What constitutes also self-interest? And they're important questions in this day and age. I mean, I grew up in the church at a time where we were having debate week after week after week about Sunday trading laws. That's all gone now, hasn't it, those discussions in most places? But I still talk regularly with a man, well, Thursday morning, a member at Hove, whose mum was a member of the Plymouth Brethren, whose attitude to the Sabbath was very puritanical. Who knows that he wouldn't have got any hot food on that day? Who knows that they weren't allowed to watch television, listen to the radio? And I'm guessing that some of you have had some of those experiences too, or at least know of them too. When I was at college, I remember going down to, as part of my training course, to spend a few days in a Jewish community in London. And I remember going to the house of a young woman who was training to become a rabbi. So you can tell it was the liberal end of the Jewish community. And she said one or two things which were really fascinating. Firstly, she said, in a very challenging way, why do you Christians never talk about Jesus? We want you to talk with us about Jesus, because we want to learn and share and find new meaning and new understanding. But she also told us of some of her upbringing and some of the past for her, and the remembrance that on a Friday night, the night before the Sabbath, there were a number of households, Jewish households she knew, that would sellotape the inside of their fridge. You know how when you open the fridge, the light comes on? So that's making a switch work. So that was work, she said. Therefore, if the night before you sellotape over the switch so the light is permanently on in the fridge, when you open the fridge, you're not turning the light on, and that's okay. Fascinating insight into the way that we manipulate things sometimes for our own self-interest. Now, you can tell I'm not someone who thinks opening the fridge on a Sabbath day is sinful. So it's okay if you've done it this morning. You're not going to be condemned. But what is work? And how do we acknowledge that and its place within us? And what is this insistence that sometimes we had? I did an assembly in my last patch, and it was with a group of sixth formers. And I took the risky approach of saying, you have a choice. I can tell you some nice, pretty stories about a man called Jesus who lived 2,000 years ago. Or you can ask someone who's a clergy person, a Christian, about the big questions that you have about life. I only did it once. The questions were so deep and demanding that just, in a sense, proved the point that if I told them a nice, pretty story about a man called Jesus, it would have had no relevance in their life. Whereas to know how faith affects our living, really important. And one of the questions from one of the young men who was there was about the fact that I think it was the then Bishop of London had pronounced in a big way that nobody should work on the opening day of the new millennia. Nobody, he said, should work. It should be this sacred, holy day where nobody should work. No doctors, no nurses, no one in the power stations, no one who provides light and energy. Are none of these people meant to work? Farmers, are you meant to let your animals go hungry overnight or during the day? Nobody is supposed to work. We have to be really careful, I believe, about how we use religion and what we think it's for. A couple of weeks ago, I talked a little bit about how it has been used, and people have suggested that it is used as a way of controlling people, of manipulating people into certain ways of being, to fill people with shame when they work on a Sunday rather than go to church. I remember I was raised as an issue in a PCC meeting of the church that I was attending and part of the choir because I wanted to play cricket on a Sunday, which was mainly because we were in a cup final and that was on a Sunday and there was no way I was going to miss that. But this real sense of what do we believe our religious rituals are for and these statements that we make. Well, Jesus points us to what is, again, if you like, that message from the prophets. As a social prophet of his time, he just reiterates again and again what the prophets have always said. How you live your life, every moment of every day, that is what gives significance to who you are. That is your religious life. Not what you don't do on certain days, or what you abstain from, but what you do day by day. And if your religious tradition means that you cannot do good on particular days, it's nonsense. It's ridiculous. Surely, God's ways are about each and every moment finding those ways to do good, to take those opportunities. I remember being late for a service once. That probably doesn't surprise you. Why was I late? I was late that day because I'd been visiting someone in hospital in the afternoon. And leaving in time to get to my service, I was walking out of a ward in the hospital when I heard a voice saying, "Andy." And I looked over to where this voice came from, and it was someone who was virtually unrecognizable from when I'd seen them previously, a couple of months previously. And they were dying. Would religious law of this day say, "Well, you've got a service to go and take, so just push that person to one side and go and take your service"? Of course not. Who would believe that someone like Jesus would say to someone, "I haven't got time for you now, I'll come back in a day or two"? Meet those needs that we can see in front of us, whatever that might mean. To do that which is good is far more important than following our religious rituals in any way. And as Jesus points out to the people who are challenging him, "Don't you walk your ox or your donkey to get water? Why then is this woman, a daughter of Israel, to be ignored in her need at this moment?" Not religious piety, says Jesus, but compassionate living. Compassionate living because we know that that is what is required of us. That is the way we should live day by day. That is what we're called to. So I pray that for us, our religion, our buildings, the ways that we do things are never more important than the love we share with one another and with all who we meet. That all our actions are guided in those ways, and that we do so in the hope that we can help people in their daily living, help people in the journey of life, help all creation be more sustainable, that all might find that they can live and live well and live more fully. It fits in with this idea, doesn't it, of the abolishment of slavery, of cutting those things which yoke us, those things which bind us. Jesus sets this woman free. We are called to set one another free, to set all people free. May we be strengthened as we seek to do that day by day. Amen.